Where danger lurks around every corner, a hero has emerged. A hero unlike any other. He was born on the distant planet Krypton and sent to Earth as a baby. Raised by a humble couple in Smallville, he grew up to become the most powerful being on the planet. But when the diabolical Lex Luthor threatens to destroy California, Superman must use all of his abilities to stop him. With stunning special effects, a soaring score, and a standout performance by Christopher Reeve, Superman is the ultimate tale of heroism and hope. But when the love of his life, Lois Lane, is in danger, Superman must risk everything to save her. Don't miss the classic movie that set the standard for superhero films to come. Superman will make you believe that a man can fly.
Hello there and welcome to It's How Old? The nostalgic look at pop culture's biggest birthdays. I'm your host, Mark, self-certified geek and, well, lover of all things nostalgic. I think that is absolutely an age thing. And in this season one, I'm diving deep into five of my, I was going to say my most nostalgic movies, which they are, but as it turns out, they're actually five of my favourite movies as well. And do you know what? I don't care, because that's why we're bloody here. Self-service nostalgia. So, you can listen to this podcast at itshowold.com. You can join me and my wonderful co-hosts on every single episode in your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple, Spotify, Global Player, or elsewhere. And we also have episodes that have dropped at the very same time. There's none of this weekly nonsense on this podcast. You can binge these in any order that you want. You could start here with Superman the movie from 1978, or you could go to Return of the Jedi, The Dark Knight, Man of Steel, or indeed Jurassic Park. We have got a fantastic episode in store. If you have listened to the Man of Steel episode, please join me in welcoming the Superman fan among Superman fans. From Sequel Pitch, it is, of course, Mr. Drew Toynbee. Hello! I was going to say hello again, but if someone's not listened to the Man of Steel one, they'll be like, hello for the first time.
Yeah. It is.
How are you, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I'm very good, mate. Very, very good. It's a right pleasure to be back.
Oh, I'm excited for this one, mate. And I was saying to you just off record, Drew and I talk a fair bit, actually. We see each other more than I see a lot of people, actually, because I'm like a recluse. But we were talking, I was looking at different co-hosts for each particular podcast that I was going to do in this series. And I was looking at like a few people I could get on to talk about Superman. And it made absolutely no sense to get anyone else but you, dude, because number one, you know, we dive deep into this stuff. We are bona fide geeks, but we talked about Man of Steel as well earlier this year on one of the other episodes for this season. And it just, when I was looking at things through the lens of Man of Steel and then looking at like watching Superman and, you know, everything it means to me and a lot of people of our generation, made absolutely no sense to talk to anyone else. So welcome back, man. Now, Sequel Pitch, what's going on with that one? I know that you guys are sort of on a bit of a hiatus at the minute, but you know, it's still there. It's still in the podcast apps.
People
can still get there and they can love it, yeah?
Yep, Sequel Pitch is still very much there. We're discussing what it will be in the future. We still all absolutely love it, just life has got a bit too bonkers between the four of us. So looking at whether other people can come in and sort of take it over and we'll come back and do guest spots, or whether it's less frequent, but it's just when we are all free. It will be back. Sequel Pitch will return. It's just not 100% sure when. Unfortunately as well, we had this big plan of the live show we did in London being the final episode for now and it being like a big send-off. And there was a problem with the recording stuff at the venue, so we lost Andy's audio track. So that's been a little bit, it's put a bit of a kibosh on that. So we're going to have to come back at least for a goodbye episode of some description or another. So yeah, do still check it out. Check out Ross's other work over with the Danger Club, and we will be back at some point soon, I'm sure.
I love it. And Sequel Pitch is genuinely one of the best formats and best podcasts I've ever listened to. And it cannot be understated that outside of like a narrative or a news podcast, you probably have the most labor-intensive podcast of any show that I've ever come across. So I completely admire that, mate. I completely admire like a seasonal approach or any of that. So that's why I've done It's How Old as a seasonal approach. But let's get on to Superman 1978. This is a huge, huge, huge movie for so many reasons and for so many people. So let's go through a quick recap. The orphaned and somewhat errant Kryptonian child Kal-El makes his way from his blown up planet where Marlon Brando has only told everyone that it was gonna blow up. But unlike anyone else in The Godfather, they didn't listen to him. And that was the mistake that they didn't make in The Godfather. You always listen to Marlon Brando.
Oh, yeah.
Sure enough, Kal-El finds his way to Earth, only to be brought up after discovery by Maren Parkin in the Kansas countryside, living a life in Smallville before discovering that he can do things that other people can't. And he sets out across the globe, following the sad bereavement of Pa Kent. He finds himself in the North Pole, discovering his heritage and discovering what it means to be a Kryptonian before heading back and, of course, facing some rather interesting challenges with a wonderfully hammed up Gene Hackman, a wonderfully matched Lois Lane, and generally a metropolis that is, well, in need of a little inspiration. Let's say that and leave that there. It's an amazing, amazing movie. We'll go into the plot details in more depth in a little while, but I'm super, super interested in this. I'm really, really interested in this. And I want to know the impact that this movie had on you, because this was released in 1978. All right. I was 4 years out from being born. I was born in 1982. This is 45 years old as we released this in 2023.
Bloody hell.
I'd not been born yet. Which is wild. It's an insane scenario. But so Superman for me has been, it's been not only Superman the character, but Superman the movie has been part of my life ever since I can remember. But I want to dig into what that means to me in just a sec. But what does Superman the movie mean to you? What does it represent to you? You know, how does it feel when you think about Superman the movie?
For me, my main route into this film was always John Williams' score. Like that was the thing when I was a kid that had the biggest impact, because and we discussed this on Man of Steel a lot, a lot of the consensus about Superman as a character, particularly on the big screen, is that he's a bit boring. He can fix everything. He's a big boy scout. And when I was younger, this movie in particular didn't do much to break that. For me, like, he saves a cat from a tree in this film, and as a younger kid, I was Spider-Man and Batman. Like, it's that weird thing of I couldn't tell you when I became aware of the character of Superman. Superman exists. It's like you know who Superman is the moment you're born. It's really weird. But having John Williams, particularly like John Williams on the run of Jaws in 75 and then Star Wars and then this, like coming from my love of Star Wars, hearing this on probably like Classic FM's movie hour in the car with my dad on a Sunday. And I insisted I had to watch it. I was like, we've got to watch it. And first watch, the music did everything for me, and the rest kind of left me a bit cold. I think Star Wars worked for me. Jurassic Park was such a big deal for me because Star Wars can't feel dated because it's complete fantasy. Jurassic Park was completely contemporary. But when I was a kid, I could tell the miniatures were miniatures, and it's weird now that I'm older, I'm way more impressed with the effects in this movie than I was when I was a child. And I'm just way more blown away by this film every time I watch it subsequently. And so, yeah, I've had a very interesting journey with this movie because I always liked the character, but this movie, like, yes, Christopher Reeve is Superman and always will be in my mind. I really have loved what Henry Cavill's done with it. I think he's brilliant. but they, like, Christopher Reeve was born to play this character, and it was always him and it was the music, but the rest I could kind of take or leave. And I'm really looking forward to discussing how that viewpoint has changed.
Yeah, I love that. That's really interesting. You mentioned the music and some of those other bits, because when we get to the score in just a second, you know, that original score, as if you were watching it, you know, way back when. I think that's going to be really, really interesting. So this movie means everything to me. I'm a huge music guy. I'm like one of those weird guys that gets goosebumps from movie scores and from just music generally. I'm a huge music guy. And Superman the movie is that movie that set everything off for me. I remember my uncle was in a brass band, Grimthorpe Brass Band, really famous brass band, the one that they brassed off around, filmed in the village. Yeah, it's amazing. And I vividly remember one of my earliest memories. I've got two or three early memories in my life. And one of those two or three memories is being stood in front of a record player at my grandma's house, listening to Grimthorpe Band play the Superman theme tune.
Wow.
And it was, I mentioned it on the Man of Steel episode. We'll talk about like the hero interval. You know, it was there in Star Wars. Da, 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 da. It's all the same. And it's that, even just now doing that, I can literally feel the goosebumps. And that was my gateway, right? To the whole world of, I want to even say like pop culture. It was the first piece of music that I played for my little girl. It was like literally the first piece of music that she ever heard was the Superman march, the title march from Superman 1978. And then growing up, it was, you know, it's a Kurt Swan interpretation. It's an innocent interpretation. He's a big blue boy scout, and that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, let's just be really good.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, this is cool. So as a kid, I was just like, wow, the hero's there. And I think as that's translated through some of the darker times in comics, the early 2000s, translated through to like some of the Justice League stuff that Grant Morrison wrote, that he just lent into this stuff. It was like, right, I'm going to write a Justice League comic, and I understand when the shit hits the fan, someone just calls Superman. That's it. Yeah. And it's done. And it's sorted. And it's finished. And so, you know, instead of trying to write around it, it was very much a, you know, we'll just handle it. And then the Henry Cavill stuff I thought was fantastic. But it was all predicated on this interpretation. And don't get me started on Smallville, because I loved it. You know, Superman Return. There's all sorts of stuff we can go into in a little bit. So this means the hell of the world to me. And whether I've watched the television cut, which we'll talk about as well, because there are some additional scenes in there. That was the one that they serialized. I've watched everything. So this for me is a monster of a movie, and I'm absolutely unapologetic in how much I love it. So I want us to score this one, but I want to set the scene a little bit. So 1978, you mentioned, it's difficult to sort of remember what was out. You mentioned obviously John Williams coming off the back of things like Jaws, coming off the back of Star Wars. But in 1978, right, here's what we had at the box office. We had Superman in number two place, but then we had Grease, which feels a lot older, granted, you know, probably because it's set in the 50s, but Grease was the number one highest grossing movie. Dude, Halloween, The Deer Hunter, right? And get this one. This one made me laugh, right? Every Which Way But Loose.
Wow.
Clyde the Orangutan and Clint Eastwood. The top 10 movie stars, Burt Reynolds, John Travolta, Dreyfus, Clint, Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, Barbara Streisand. The musical artists, the Bee Gees, were in the top 10 musical artists four times separately as the Bee Gees and as solo artists, right? That just shows you what the landscape was like. Yeah, it was wild, mate. So here we've got a movie written by Mario Puzo, screenplay by Mario Puzo, which, you know, 6 years when he was writing it, obviously probably only 2 or 3 years out from The Godfather, of course, becoming a movie. We had Marlon Brando out there as an absolute tentpole. So there's a heck of a lot to talk about. So cast your mind back to the first time you saw this as a kid. You were listening to the music. You'd got the classic FM track on there. You'd asked your dad to watch it. You've just seen it for the very, very first time.
Yep.
What did you score this as a kid out of 10?
out of 10, it would definitely have still been positive. I'd say it was about a 6 for me as a kid.
Okay.
Like, it was fine. I had fun. I was drawn to Christopher Reeve. I loved the music. Some of it was maybe a bit hammy because I couldn't say how old I was. I was... it's funny how the way that I figure out my timeline is. Were my parents still together? They were still together, so I was younger than 10.
Mate, I do that. I'm the same.
But yeah, so like somewhere for between like 7 and 10 years old. So maybe if I'd been a bit younger, the magic might have hit me that little bit more. But yeah, a solid 6 out of 10. But I was a kid with no taste.
Hey, no, that tracks though, because I probably watched this when I was 3 or 4 the first time. And it was actually a little bit like Return of the Jedi when I did the Return of the Jedi episode with Gaz. Like, it was almost one of those that were on at Christmas. Like, Return of the Jedi always seemed to be the movie that was on at Christmas. It wasn't Empire, it wasn't Star Wars. It was always Return of the Jedi. I don't know if that was like an ITV licensing thing, but it seems like the same thing for me, where I'm pretty sure I watched like the TV serialization of it, where they broke it into 2 or 3 parts and added the extra scenes to fill it out.
Right.
And for me, it was right in that, almost that Goldilocks zone for me, where I was just old enough to be like, ooh, mild peril. But at the same time, I was like, oh, Lex Luthor's fine. Yeah. I know, you know, when you get older, you're like, wait a minute, is he burning someone alive?
Yeah. And then, yeah.
It's dark shit. But then as a kid, you're like, oh, he's fine. Look at him. He just wants a bit of land.
Yeah.
We're good. The people, they won't really die. Shoot. It's cool.
Everyone
it's cool.
Can
it's
swim.
Like a comic book. Yeah, it'd be all right. So it was, yeah, I get that. So for me, I'm unapologetic, like straight down the wire, 10 out of 10, just because I remember this so fondly. Mm. So we'll see if that changes as we get older, because I'm always a little bit critical of things the older I get. Like, I did it with the Dark Knight one. I was like, oh, this movie's going to be dog shit when I watch it again. Cause it can't, how can it possibly be as good as everyone thought it was? Watched it again. I was like, damn it. It's still a 10. Damn it. Like, there's nothing at all wrong with that entire movie. So I will see. We'll see. But it sounds like you might change. We'll see.
Yeah.
Let's get into the cast, my friend. We've got an absolutely stellar cast. And it's a funny sort of cast, because you look at this through the lens of history. Christopher Reeve as Superman, Clark Kent, Kal-El, clearly wasn't a big star at the time. I don't know if he'd even done Mean Streets by this point. We've got Gene Hackman, who was at almost the peak of his powers, you know, Italian job style. He was at the peak of his powers. The classic move of casting an absolute monster star as the villain. Jeff East, you know, he still does the con circuit, played a good part. But then we also had some beauties. You know, we had Margot Kidder, Glenn Ford, who was a bit of a powerhouse from back in the day. People like Jackie Cooper, rounding out as Perry White. Little ones like Mark McClure, you know, the genre star, you know, he of Back to the Future fame,
who would
just continue to be around this kind of movie. Ned Beatty, Jack O'Halloran, Maria Schell, Sarah Douglas as Ursa, and so on and so forth. And then, of course, Marlon freaking Brando. You know, Marlon freaking Brando. Which is wild.
It really is.
That guy... he was at the peak of his bloody powers at that point. So let's think about that for a little while. Let's talk about some of these cast members. There's too many to go through. Let's pick out Reeve, Brando, Margot Kidder, and if we get time, we'll go to Gene Hackman. And the reason I say if we get time is because Gene Hackman is just obviously freaking great.
Yeah,
like, he's Gene Hackman. It's impossible for him not to be good. So Christopher Reeve, I don't know if you've seen the screen test. Skinny kid in a sweaty Superman suit. Yeah. 6'4", good looking guy, looks exactly like Kurt Swan used to draw Superman. You know, I was exposed early on to like the Max Fleischer cartoons. You know, this was very much as if Siegel and Shuster had just gone, that's the man. That's the guy. So he looked the part. He put a lot of weight on, worked with David Prowse. who was, of course, the body behind Darth Vader, to bulk up for this. Ernest is probably too simplistic, but holy crap, man. I mean, that's, I don't know if there's any better way to describe his performance. He's just, he embodies every facet of Superman so tightly.
Yeah.
Everything is so clean. Everything is so emblematic of that character. It's almost as if, and I think this movie can probably be an example of this entire thing. Like, I'm not sure this movie or this characterization would have worked in any other era. The 60s, it would have been too dark. The 80s, it was too lighthearted. You know, it was just the embodiment that Christopher Reeve puts into this character is absolutely perfect for the movie, and the movie's perfect for the time. So what do you make as Reeve as Superman to start with? And then we'll get on to Clark Kent.
He's just great. Like, he still does the best job for me of, although actually Tyler, I don't know how to pronounce his surname, Hoechner?
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know how you say it.
In the Superman and Lois, does a really good job of the difference between Clark and Superman as well. But just
he's like the working at home dad guy, though. I'm going to throw that one in.
Yeah,
he's like,
yeah, definitely.
He hides behind his like gas bill.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? He's amazing for it, but he sort of hides behind his kids' issues. He's like, oh man, I've got to be so mentally present and aware of everyone's feelings. I'll put my glasses on. That'll help me think. You know?
Yeah.
And it's, don't get me wrong, that show I think is the best overall Superman thing that's maybe ever been done. But yeah, it's not. It's not perfect. Very cosmopolitan Clark Kent, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. But yeah, I think the moment in the movie that stands out for me is just after Superman and Lois have done their flight. And he flies off, and I didn't realize that it was actually a one shot. So when he flies away from the balcony, that's a rear projection. So that is all one shot. There's no hidden cut or anything when Clark appears at the door. And Lois walks out of the room, and he starts talking because he's about to admit who he is. And then he changes his mind, and he goes from the forthright, and he speaks a bit faster, and he's assertive but not arrogant, and then his whole body changes, and it's that he inhabits the role of Superman so well that it you don't notice that it's a performance. Like, you can see that Clark Kent is a performance, and that's another masterstroke of the overall performance in the film, of just how comfortable with who he is and how comfortable he is with his responsibility and his power. And yeah, he's so aspirational, and you want to be a better person when he's just there talking. It's mad. It's an incredible performance.
That is so true, man. That inspirational side of it, and like you said, the aspiration that it brings to you just as the movie goer, is a huge takeaway from this film. I think a lot of that's to do with Donner's direction. You know, Richard Donner is solid at this sort of stuff. He knows how to get people thinking and feeling. And later on, we're going to talk about the high points and the low points. And I almost had, I've got some of that as my high point, but I almost had that particular piece where he takes the glasses off, straightens up.
Yeah.
And because that is the quintessential performance of any Superman transitioning.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. There are some absolute standout things. The transition in the phone box, the hotel lobby, the spinning door, like all of it is, like, that went on to define Superman even further in the public consciousness. This idea you do it in a phone box, this idea you do it in a revolving door.
Yeah.
And you get changed from Clark to, you know, the whole ripping the shirt open. We've seen that countless times. All starts here properly in when it comes to the wider public view, not just the comic book readers. But that This is, for me, where Reeve is so good. That particular moment where he just thinks he might tell her, he's a different person.
Yeah.
He's a different person. And it's that, you know, you used to hear it when you were a kid, and you sort of still see the group, oh, the disguise is just some glasses. You're like, no, it's not. That's the whole point of it. It's the unassuming, bumbling, nervous, Kansas farm boy that's just happened to be wearing a suit that's a bit big for him.
Yeah.
And he's trying to figure his way out of, you know, the Daily Planet doors, and he's saying things like swell, and he's doing all that stuff that makes Lois think, well, who is this klutz?
Yeah.
And then suddenly, just like a switch, you're like, yeah, you can look after me, mate. You know what I mean? That entire safety element where you're like, because I think that's the big thing about Superman is that you have to make it feel like when he turns up, you're all safe. And that's why I think that Superman Returns, I think Superman Returns is a great film. I can't wait to do that in a couple of years on this show. But when viewed through the lens of a sequel to Superman,
yeah,
the scene where he saves the plane, like, fuck me, of course you'd feel like that. Of course, if you're on your last legs and this is it, you're absolutely dead, what's the thing that you want to see?
Yeah.
It's Superman flying by. Of course it is. And as a kid, you're like, yes, that's what Reeve embodies for me when he stands up. It's not quite the highest point of the movie for me, which I'll get to later, but it's such a powerful piece. But let's flip that around then. So bouncing off all three elements of Clark. So I'm talking three elements. I'm talking Superman, Metropolis Clark, and Kal-El / Smallville Clark, which are very different characters. You've got Margot Kidder. You know, has there ever been a better Lois Lane? There are some arguments for Terry Hatcher, Erica Durance, maybe. Has there ever been a better Lois than Margot Kidder, though?
Not for me in the modern day. Again, I think Terry Hatcher was, when I was a kid, it's weird that Christopher Reeve was my Superman, but Terry Hatcher was my Lois Lane.
I hear that. And there were very similar characterizations. They weren't written to be the weak foil like so many female characters were written back in those days. They were Lois, both versions of Lois, Kidder, Margot Kidder and Terry Hatcher were strong, but they were vulnerable enough when they needed to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, she's not falling out of a freaking window. She's jumping out of a window.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, but yeah, Margot Kidder is just, I love that her first line in this movie is, bloodletting. How many T's are in bloodletting? And like, she's writing like a really gritty, she comes across as being, she's not cynical, but she's not some wide-eyed waif. Like she's happy to get down and down in the muck and find the gritty stories. And like when they're getting held up at gunpoint, and she's just like, I'm not having this. And yes, Clark has to catch the bullet, but it's still, she's got that spark. But again, the way that she plays, like the meeting where they sit at the table and they chat, and just the outrageous flirting that's going on, and that balance of her being on the edge of being cynical and not trusting the world around her, and falling in love with the big blue Boy Scout. It's so well done. It is so well done. And just like the delivery of the line when he catches her with the helicopter and he's like, don't worry, I've got you. You got me. Who's got you? And that line delivery is absolutely spot on. I feel like I should be able to say more about her performance, but again, it's just so spot on. She just does a fantastic job. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I totally agree, man. And again, they were two of my almost the top points. The you know, you got me, who's got you? And it was very, to me, like, it was very much that representation of Superman and Lois. You know, we've seen it a lot of the times. We've seen Superman and Lois as we've seen on TV now. And that's very much about them, the couple, them, the family unit.
Hmm.
And we saw Lois and Clark back in the day in the 90s. I loved that show. It was very much the John Byrne version. The parents are alive. It was the post-crisis version. Very much the, you know, Kryptonians coming down and trying to resettle. And, you know, there was a lot of post-crisis stuff in there, whereas the Kurt Swan stuff that we're dealing with, or the Kurt Swan-esque stuff now that we're dealing with, was very, very different. And I think that the, where it's always, you know, Lois and Clark, the romance, so that's, you know, throughout the Lois and Clark season, and throughout Superman and Lois, throughout Smallville, from season four onwards, it was very much about these two will end up together. Whereas I think with Superman the movie, you know that that is going to happen.
Yeah.
But the journey is so different. It's like, screw Clark, I'm in for Superman. And then eventually, Clark's genuine kindness wins her over.
Yeah.
And she's not surprised. She starts to guess, and jumps out the damn window. So he goes and saves her. And he's like, well, you know, Miss Lane, what do you... And you, so there's a hell of a lot. But I think what they do so well in this one, especially with Lois, is they make it Clark and Lois, the unit, but without forcing the romance in.
Yeah.
And without forcing the ending. With, yeah, the scene on the rooftop. The chemistry is wild. And the flirting is outrageous. And the lines and everything are so well done. But it's not, it never feels like, hey, I'm Luke Skywalker, I'm here to save you. It's like, it's, and don't get me wrong, I love that. You know, I'm a Star Wars fan. But it's very much, right, are you an alien?
Yeah.
Let's just get down to this. You know, and she's there. She's the gritty reporter. So yeah, man, I think it's absolutely fantastic. Let's spend a little bit of time on Marlon Brando, just because you can't not.
No.
The gravitas that he brings, like that entire opening sequence, to me, like the movie's sort of, you know, the classic three-act run-through. You've got the setup, the whole Krypton setup. You've got everything up to Pa Kent's death, pretty much in Act 1.
Yeah.
You've got Act 2, you've got the move into Metropolis, you've got the whole establishing of Superman, the character, in the TV cut, you've got the going around saving things, you've got in the tree, the cat out of the tree, and then you've got obviously the final scene, which is, you know, we know that Lex Luthor's going to drop the West Coast, let's go and sort it out. Marlon Brando is such a huge presence in this film. With not that much to do, but what he does do is the weight of it has been felt ever since.
Yes.
Everything and every Jor-El has to now live up to Marlon Brando. And yeah, what do you make of that? Because he was a big get for something like this. He was a big get for Superman. He was top billing. It was an interesting move.
Yeah. I think it was incredibly shrewd for a movie that could very easily have been written off as a movie that is just for kids. And between having Marlon Brando and Gene Hackman in the cast, I expect that it had quite an impact on the parents being like, oh, what? Marlon Brando's? Okay, all right, fine. I will take the kids to see this movie because Brando's in it. It's got to be serious. It's got to have some sort of weight in overall culture if he's said yes to this. And I mean, the fact that he said yes to it because he got like $3 million up front, and then like I think he made something like $14 million for his 10 minutes of screen time. Like, it's hearing all of the behind the scenes stuff about how he was at the point in his career when he refused to learn lines and was like telling them to film the rehearsals in case they got it then so that he wouldn't have to do more work. Like, it's so infuriating, but it just adds to the legend. He's just, very few actors have that kind of dangerous authority to them. I don't know how much of that is me not being able to separate the actor from like Colonel Kurtz and from The Godfather, but he's patrician like and patriarchal, and he feels like he could turn. He's on a knife edge between danger and care, and it's utterly magnetic. And yeah, just his line delivery, by all accounts, apparently the very first time he ever bothered to fucking read the lines, he just says it in the most iconic way possible that everyone remembers forever. It's astonishing.
Well, it's the weight of the way he delivers it, isn't it? And you know, the way he enunciates things, the cadence of his voice, you know, they've been reusing this stuff for a long, long time, you know? And it's you know, to move to like Superman Returns and suddenly just to, you know, the father becomes the son.
Yeah.
And you're like, fucking hell, like that was, they probably didn't even think of that as a thing when they were doing it. It was just an example of just assimilate my knowledge and suddenly you become the representation. And the fact that they're mining that performance, and they didn't want to, because like you said, he negotiated such a deal on the back end that they had to replace him with Lara Lorvan, that's his mum's name, isn't it? The maiden name. In the sequels, you're like, okay, I get it, all right? I get this is how big a deal this was. But it makes you wonder, you know, who, had Brando not been there, that opening sequence, the entire gravitas of a planet that you've never talked about before, you've never heard before, you don't really care about, like, probably wouldn't have mattered half as much.
No.
Like, I loved the Russell Crowe stuff. I remember sitting in the theater watching Man of Steel and being like, holy shit, this is badass Krypton. Like, Jor-El is an absolute monster. This is awesome. But I didn't care half as much when Krypton blew up because I didn't have someone going, I'm not one for wild-eyed speculation and so on. Yeah. You're like, damn, like, you're making me feel bad, Marlon. Like, even I'm doubting you. I'm sorry. So it's such a weight to it, dude. It was such a iconic performance. And it sort of, we'll get to this with the SFX later, but it's intrinsically tied to the crystal elements and intrinsically tied to the barren wasteland of Krypton, as opposed to this, you know, this lush green space that you see in some interpretations, or even like the mountainous sort of cavernous Krypton from Man of Steel. Mm. It's not, it was this barren, cold version of it that was very crystalline and very unwelcoming. And when you overlay Brando's, he's almost cold and calculating, but then you know he's dealing with looking after his kid, and the depth of his voice and the cadence of his voice. There's such an interesting juxtaposition of the environment and even what he's wearing with what he's doing and what he's saying, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I can't add to what you just, you summed it up perfectly. I'd just be saying what you said again.
Well, we can move on. We can move on because I want to get to some of the high points. All right. Well, there's two or three that I'm sure stand out for each of us. We're going to do the high points, the low points, and a couple of standouts. And the high point, I think we can all agree on, is obviously the performances. We can agree on things like the characterizations. But were there any particular high points in the movie, either from a plot perspective or any lines that you just keep coming back to? What were some of the things that stood out for you that if someone brings up Superman the movie, you know, that's where your mind goes?
I think I'm being really boring. I think I've already covered them for me. It's the interview scene and the aftermath when he's Clark, but he's not, and then but he puts the glasses on. Like that is the heart of this movie for me. Just watching it last night, the chemistry, the absolute, like, deeply it's like there's static in the air when you watch the two of them having that chat, and the way that he is flirting, 100% he's flirting, but everything he says and the way that he says it can be read as completely straightforward and innocent, but you know that it isn't, but it still looks like it might be. And watching Margot Kidder kind of figure that out and begin to be swept up in it, absolutely stunning. And then just anytime the music's on, really, for me.
Oh, dude, I hear that. And to be fair, this is probably one of those movies where we can't separate one standout point from a range of high points where we normally do. Because I think I totally agree. We are always coming back to that scene, and that I've literally written it down last night. That scene is my entire high point. Yeah, the music, the beginning, the timpani.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck, someone's coming. Dun, dun, dun. Then you're like, it's a good guy.
Yeah.
Screw Darth Vader. You know, dun, dun, dun. And it's, there's all that, you know, there's so many high points. But yeah, I agree. The standout high point, the whole pivotal moment of that entire series of movies is that apartment rooftop scene.
Yeah.
Everything about it is electric. The questions that she asks, the way she asks them, the getting flustered, the, you know, you really shouldn't smoke, Miss Lane. And, you know, she's like, lung cancer? And he's like, not yet, thankfully. And she's like, whoa, we can see through. And there's, and even, but the way that that entire scene is pivotal, you know, wait a minute, you can see through it, anything but lead, Miss Lane. And you're like, oh, so someone, so Lex read that. But then even in Superman Returns, the article is there. Why the world needs to, or whatever it is, One Night with Superman, I forget the headline. And it's pivotal, I think, to the whole lore of Superman in the comics, in cross media, from that point onwards. And it's like it's a lesson and a masterclass in directing, in making, you know, the world that we live in now with the MCU and everything that we see superhero wise, like it's a lesson in taking a guy in spandex tights and making him feel safe, comfortable, flirty, confident, articulate, genuine. And he's got a skin tight suit on, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's wild. So yeah, I agree. I think that's got to be the high point for me as well. Any low points from your rewatch? Anything that you I remember you saying there were a couple of things as a kid you weren't overly keen on.
I think as a kid, it was the fact that he doesn't fight anyone that bugged me. I wanted to see him punch something, like really, not just lift up a rock. I wanted to see him hit something.
Well, I think that's a funny thing to try to dig in on that in a second is, yeah, I agree with you. And I didn't realize that was missing for a long, long time. And then someone makes him punch someone and everyone's like, he's knocked fucking buildings down.
Yeah.
What a shite, exactly. What a shocking shite film this is. Get it off. Yeah. Get it off my Superman would never do that. And you're like, hang on a minute here. You kind of want him to hit something. Who's he going to hit?
Yeah, exactly.
That can take it. It's a very difficult thing that, but yeah, I agree, man. I didn't realize that was missing for such a long time, but you're right. Yeah. It is.
And that was much less of an issue for me watching it last night than when I was a kid. Like that was the biggest drawback for me as a kid. As an adult, honestly, the thing that really sticks out to me is, it obviously the sort of the Christ and Christianity allegories are very, very clear for everyone to see. I'm sending them my only son, blah, 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 blah. But something that later adaptations I do think do better is that Clark or Kal-El becomes Clark Kent and becomes Superman in later adaptations because of the influence of his parents. They turn him into Superman. Yeah. Where in this one, he's like, oh, shit, Dad died. Right, I'm going to leave for 12 years. Bye, Mum. And then he shuts himself away in the Arctic for 12 years and learns to be Superman and then reappears and is Superman. And I think that worked because particularly for the time, it's a pretty handy way to solve the origin story, to just be like, and then he went away and he came back and he was Superman. You saw how he got there. Don't worry about this, but it all went fine. Just took a long time. Now he's back. Woo! But in terms of what the message of the film is, I prefer it when it's the nature versus nurture thing. I watched the trailer earlier and it says that once there was a race of aliens that had greater minds and greater bodies and a greater capacity for good. And that really cemented it for me, because I was like, oh, hey, it's kind of saying he was genetically predisposed to always be Superman. There was never anything that was going to change that, really. And I do find it more interesting when the reason he becomes Superman is because he had the spectacular good fortune to be picked up by Myron Parr Kent. And for there, and obviously they still have an influence over who he is as a character in this film, but they make him into Clark and then Jor-El turns him into Superman. And I prefer it when they kind of do both.
Yeah, I hear that, actually. I do actually fully agree with that. And I think there's the Christ allegory is present in everything, isn't it? You know, you see it in Man of Steel, heck of a lot.
Yeah.
You see it in Superman Returns, probably above all else. He quite literally falls to Earth in a crot. And then, you know, so then it's a funny one, that, because he falls to Earth and then they pan out to that massive shot from a distance. All you hear is,
doof. Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell. Is he all right? Oh, it's fine. Superman, fine. Anyone else, it'd just be better zoom in on that guy. He's Superman. He's in a crater right now. I can't afford that. But you're right. I never clocked that before. Yeah. In particular, the predisposition, because he says, you know, I said, you know, overall their capacity for good. For this reason, I send them you, my only son. And it's, even Jor-El, like, they sort of got it wrong in the trailer, because even Jor-El's like, I sent you there because I know that they've got a great capacity for good. All they need is someone that's sort of a bit incorruptible to show them the way. And then the trailer's like, aliens are better.
Yeah.
You know, all right, okay. But, you know, I get that. And I think that's what Smallville did so well.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
As much as there's so many Freak of the Week episodes that aren't great, there's so much digression, you know, the whole fucking witches thing in season 4 was crap. But everything that Myron Parr Kent are the best representations of that. John Schneider in particular, you can quite literally see that if Christopher Reeve Superman was brought up with him, he would turn out like Christopher Reeve Superman.
Yes. Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And I think Zack Snyder tried to reverse that a little bit and flip it a little bit, where it becomes a sort of a bridge of the two things here. So what I mean by that is that the Costner version was clearly tightly matched to like the John Schneider Smallville version, you know, very homely, very much I'm your dad, you do the right thing. But should I let the kids die? Maybe you should. Is that right? There was no explanation, but you know the reason is so that the world can benefit from it.
Yeah.
As opposed to just you getting locked up in some sort of weird Flashpoint prison where I think a lot of people confuse that, and Zack Snyder didn't do a great job of letting it be known that actually it was the balance of Clark's own morality compared and contrasted against bits of advice like that, where you could see that it was like, okay, Clark's thinking, I understand what he's saying, but I don't necessarily agree with the how he's getting there.
Yes.
So, you know, so I think Zack Snyder was so close to so much good stuff. But you're right in the best stories for me, and they got really close to this Superman the movie, because the big thing I took from the Glenn Ford Parr Kent death scene was, regardless of all the power that this guy has, no matter what it is, he cannot stop his dad dying of a heart attack. And that was the message that I took from that. But you're right in that we were almost led to believe that he was just a higher power, as opposed to the like you said, the storyline of here's the meeting of the cultures, and my parents, regardless of the power, they've made me realize that you just don't be a wanker. you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I get that. And it's, I think that's where a lot of Superman movies have struggled, and even Smallville to a degree have sort of struggled, because they've tried to do the bit in between. Like, Man of Steel was like a Superman Begins, as we said in the episode, that was very much a, how do you realize you do not want to murder someone if you've got all this power and the guy says he's going to murder everyone? Yeah. There has to be something that makes you think you're not going to do that, and probably doing it will make you realize that that is crap. Yeah. So you're never going to do it again. So it was just a different version. And like, Smallville's tried to slot into that gap. And I do have a feeling that like the new Corin Sweat, the James Gunn movie is going to sort of just dig into a little bit of that as well.
I keep forgetting that's coming. Like,
he looks all right, you know, if they released a picture of him recently. He looks all right.
In costume?
Nah, he was training. Okay. He was at the gym. Yeah.
He's got the right look. I don't think I've watched anything else that's got in him that's got him in it. But
no, same.
I can definitely see it. And I like, was it last night I saw Nicholas Holt is Lex Luthor, which is cool.
I'm all right with that.
I'm on board with that too.
Do you think he'll be bold, or will they go down the John Shea? This is a man that's an evil genius, multi-trillionaire. Pretty sure he can get a hair transplant.
I mean, we know that he's comfortable with a bald cap. I assume it was a bald cap for Mad Max.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon they're going to really bulk him up. I reckon they're going to have him be bodybuilder Lex, and he's going to be bald, and they're going to be like, right, Nick, get down the gym for the next 8 months with a trainer every single day. We want you to be freaking huge. Because they're going to pivot so hard away from Jesse Eisenberg. They can't do anything remotely like tech bro.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hope he's bald. Lex is bald. Lex is bald. Come on.
I reckon he's going to be a smooth criminal. I reckon he's going to be the James Bond style Lex that you see in like the early... Actually, all the way through the 2000s, you know, the suit wearing, you know, the skyscraper penthouse guy.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's going to be. But we digress. Now, I think we can all agree on what some of the high points were. For me, the couple of low points outside of that one that you've just brought up, which I thought were fantastic. Just a couple of little bits of detail for me. That Lois voiceover is shocking.
The rhyming. It rhymes. Yeah. It's like
pre-Eminem. Oh, dude, that was wild. And don't get me wrong, I love the love theme. We had the love theme at our wedding, Can You Read My Mind? Yeah. Amazing. Don't ruin it by putting a Lois rap on it. The other thing that I think was just a sign of the times, it's dated very badly, is that you've got Gene Hackman as Lex, you've got Ned Beatty as Otis, who I think is hilarious. The theme song that he's got, Mr. Luthor, you know, the whole thing is a great little bit of comedic relief. But Miss Teschmacher, the writing of that character has not dated well.
Yeah, that's fair.
Apparently, Teschmacher's going to be in the new one, though, in Superman Legacy.
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Teschmacher. Apparently, I don't know. And they did, Smallville had Tess Mercer that was the homage as well, didn't she? She was the Tess Mercer, Teschmacher. It was the homage of Smallville, which was interesting. But yeah, I think that characterization has not dated well.
Yeah.
At all.
Agreed. I would definitely agree with that.
All right. We are going to get on to the sound effects, the special effects. We're going to get on to how well Superman, the movie from 1978, has aged. And we're going to wrap up with our rewatch ratings in just a second. Before we do that, let me tell you about this.
Hello there.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Spark of Rebellion.
If you are enjoying this episode, I have absolutely no doubt that you will love our sister show, Spark of Rebellion. With news, views, and a little bit of comedy, it is your weekly dose of everything Star Wars, and it's intended to keep busy people like you and I up to date with everything happening in a galaxy far, far away. Of course, it's available in your podcast app of choice or at sparkofrebellion.com. All right. This is It's How Old. We are discussing Superman the movie with the one, the only Mr. Drew Toynbee, 45 years after its release. Dude, we got to get to it. We got to get to the music. John Williams, a year after Star Wars, just before Indiana Jones, a few years before Indiana Jones, 81. I mean, coming off the back of Jaws, coming off the back of Star Wars. For me, I think it's his best stuff, because it was the first thing, as I said at the beginning, I was introduced to. I still love it. It was the first thing that I played for my little girl. I relate very strongly to it. The whole title march, the whole love song theme, the everything about the music, the fact that you thought it said Superman when it did, holy shit, it spoke. everything about it, for me, is iconic. And I could talk about it forever and keep re-saying that in so many different ways, but I almost can't spend any more time on the music, because I will just keep saying how good it is.
Yeah, I would be exactly the same. It's wonderful. And exactly like you were saying, just I can't even hear the music, but I'm just thinking about the Superman march, and I literally have goosebumps, and it's not because it's cold in the shed where I'm recording.
It's that bit for me, dude, where, I mean, there's the beginning bit, you know, the 1938 cinema, we get all the you know, we get that feeling of the ye oldest cinema, we get that, you know, da, 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 da. And you can, you know, it's building to something. And the even after Krypton explodes, you know, you've got a very ethereal theme to Krypton. You've got a very ethereal-esque, you know, this is clearly supposed to be otherworldly, and then it explodes, and you've got, and you can just feel it mounting up.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's that? And you're like, shit, here we go. And it just, what I love about it is that everyone just remembers the end, the crescendos. But the whole thing from the beginning is Superman. You know, even the bit where it settles into a more of a genuine march, you know, where the full band's playing. The whole glissandos and everything running up and down. And you're just like, you can separate the theme into so many, like, okay, here's the arrival. Here's the getting shit done. Yep. Here's like the, we're good, I've got you, I've got the helicopter, all you have to do is trust me. The whole, everything. And then the stark contrast between that and the love theme and the Ned's theme, you know, that whole, it's just, oh man, it is nailed so, so well. It is so good. And it's, I don't know how you follow it. We said it on the Man of Steel episode. You know, Hans Zimmer evoked the Superman theme with that hero interval. Dun, dun. And that's such a smart move. Yeah. And I don't know. Can Superman ever escape that theme tune?
I don't know. It's difficult. There's, unfortunately for us, we are going to begin transitioning into a period of time where the music of John Williams is not as impactful. Like, already arguably Gen Z kids probably aren't, there probably aren't as many full on kids who are Gen Z who consider themselves to be as geeky as we consider ourselves to be. Almost certainly have different music composers that were that person. It's probably Hans Zimmer for them. It's probably like everything from Inception onwards, and they're like, yeah, Hans Zimmer is the man, because he is, he's fantastic. But it is John Williams' work is always wonderful, but his work is best when it is associated with something else for me. Like the Superman march would be a special piece of music to listen to regardless. But if it wasn't associated with Superman, I don't know if we'd, we'd remember it as well.
It's just, I get that. It's just, I shouldn't interrupt. It's sort of associated with that heroism and the earnestness and the, you're right. And I've seen like a couple of the YouTube videos, like here's Man of Steel, the first flight in the, whatever it is, the desert or the tundra, wherever it is, but with the John Williams theme tune, and you're like, that is freaking epic. But like you said, if it's like, here's Interstellar with Superman. Or here is like, even like Iron Man or Batman, you're just like, this doesn't work. Do you think it's because it evokes that feeling in you, that inspiration, that aspiration that you mentioned? You listen to that and you feel, I am now going to go and be better at whatever it is.
Yeah, it definitely makes you want to be, even though I constantly fail at being better at stuff, but there we go.
You never walk away from Superman the movie's theme tune going, that's it, I need to practice something. I'm going to get marginally better over the course of a year. You just want to go out and fly, and then you realize you can't, and you're like, fuck it, back to
work. Yeah, exactly. I hope that John Williams' Superman theme stays as the centrally iconic one. But I remember walking out of watching The Avengers in 2012. Sorry, I'm very conscious of the time. I'll speed up. Walking out and being like,
no, we're good.
I enjoyed the music at the time. And I walked out and thought, I know that I thought the music was good while I was watching it, but I can't remember the Avengers theme. And now I will never forget the Avengers theme.
Yeah, I get that.
I think there definitely are other artists out there who will be able to come up with something that is as iconic, but whether that artist will be assigned to work on Superman, this next reboot or the one that comes after, who knows? It will take some beating.
It will indeed. All right, we are going to wrap up with our rewatch scores in just one second. But just a little reminder, if you're enjoying this episode, if you're a nostalgia geek like we are, this is an unapologetic nostalgia fest. You can call it fan service. You can call it what you want. That is what we are here for. So sorry, not sorry. You can check out other episodes in this series. Return of the Jedi, The Dark Knight, Man of Steel, Jurassic Park, and we are in for a nostalgia fest on those as well. So you better get used to it. You can listen to them in any order at itshowold.com or in your podcast app of choice. All right, my friend, let's wrap up with how for you, I mean, you're a much more of a movie-centric guy than me. I'm just like, you know, I'm the superficial movie guy. As someone that's a bit more technical, someone that knows more about the movie industry and movies generally, how has this movie aged for you overall? That can be VFX, that can be the storyline, it can be anything and anything and everything. How has this movie aged?
Pretty well. If I was going to score how well it's aged out of 10, I'd give it a 7 or an 8. Like there are definitely some of the character decisions feel very much of their time. And whilst I am more able as an adult to be impressed by what they achieved with the effects for 1978, when I get round to showing my son this movie, he's not going to be impressed.
I get that. That's the irony, isn't it? Is that the younger that you are, the more that you'll notice the effect, whereas the older that you are, even through the lens of nostalgia, you're like, yeah, that's cool for its
time. Exactly. It's being like knowing that they spent like $2 million of the budget trying to come up with the right technologies to do flight on screen is so cool. And I have so much respect for it. And so for me, it's aged remarkably well. And again, there's something incredibly timeless about this character that can hopefully work in any era, but it is, mileage will vary.
I agree. I get that totally. And I always, you'll see this when it comes to the score, this is 100% scored from a nostalgia perspective. And it's not, you know, that's the point of the podcast. If I was looking at this, if I was on Sequel Pitch and we were doing a sequel to to Superman the movie or to whatever Superman Returns, which would be badass, the idea of this movie would be scored much less from an aging perspective, just because I would try and remove nostalgia and I would look at things a lot more deeply.
Yes. Yeah.
So I completely get that. You can see the VFX of miniatures. You can see the strings on some things. But as a kid, I believed the marketing. I believed that a man could fly, and that it did its job for me as a kid. In fact, I almost relate this to like the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah.
You know, if I was watching this as like a 20-odd-year-old guy that was a Star Wars fan, I'd be like, these are dogger. I was watching them as a 9-year-old that it was aimed at, I'd be like, these are absolutely badass. Yeah. These are fantastic. And I think they're saying that the aging logic applies to them. You know, I watch them now and think to myself, oh, George, that CGI is a bit sketchy, old cop. Regardless of what you did for the industry, that has not dated that well. But as a kid, you're like, this is, at the time, like, this is wild. So yeah, I understand that. Yeah, I think the VFX, amazing for the time. But to my little girl, in a few years' time, will be distracted.
Yes.
I think that's how I'd sort of sum it up. All right, my man, I'm going to come straight out. I'm just going to score it first. Screw it. I'm in for it. I'm going to still give it a 10. And it's purely from a nostalgia perspective. There is absolutely nothing else in play other than I put this movie on or I listen to this movie and I'm transported to a time in my mind where I didn't have to worry about anything, didn't have to think about anything. All I had to do was enjoy watching Superman. So I've got to give it a 10 out of 10 just because if I score it lower, I'm cheating Child Mark from 1985.
I think that is absolutely fair enough, mate. And
what about you?
I think I did this last time as well, but I'm giving it a 10 as well. Apparently as an adult, Superman on film is my jam, and I'm scoring it. It's not even for my own nostalgia. It's for my wider appreciation of what this movie did to create the cinematic landscape that I have grown up loving and continue to enjoy, and all the things they did pioneer, and Christopher Reeve's performance and Margot Kidder's performance, and that goddamn score. I would give it a 10 just for allowing that music to exist. It's a deeply special movie, and it doesn't deserve to have points taken off because it was made 45 years ago and they had some ideas about writing dialogue which aren't fashionable anymore and didn't have access to the same level of technology that we do now. It's a marvelous movie, and it would be worse if he punched someone.
I love that. And I agree. I think that's subliminally, that's what it means to be Superman, is to avoid the violence in any way possible. And that's the irony of it, isn't it? As a guy that, you know, bar fight kicks off, I'm fucking out of there. You know, why would you want to fight? I don't understand fighting. So yeah, I am completely on board with that. And I think just to wrap up on that, it continues to be the benchmark that every, not only Superman movie, but Superman media on film, video games, anywhere, that it is constantly measured against Superman the movie. And I think for that reason alone, it can't ever be discounted as a real tentpole in not only the superhero genre, but movie making overall. And I think, again, it's very much like the prequels, that did a lot in the prequels to pioneer things, digital cameras, the way that they shot stuff. And I think you go back to Superman, and as you say, you don't have this generation of movies. So yeah, I wholeheartedly hear that, my friend. All right, what did you, the ever-present nostalgia-seeking listener, think? How did you score it when you were a wee bambino, and how do you score it now on a rewatch? Let me know over at It's How Old on the Twitter. Drew, this has been a real pleasure, my friend. Thank you for joining me again, and I'm excited to hear what's next for Sequel Pitch.
Yeah, me too. I will. You will be probably the first to know as soon as we have a plan. You personally.
I love it. You absolute legend. Well, big thanks to Drew, and big thanks to you out there listening. As I said, go check out Return of the Jedi, The Dark Knight, Man of Steel, and Jurassic Park. You can listen to them in any order at itshowold.com or in your podcast app of choice just by searching It How Old. Thank you for tuning in. I'm looking forward to what is coming up on the next few seasons of this podcast. It's going to be very, very interesting and a heck of a lot of fun. But until then, keep doing what you do. Thank you so much for tuning in and keep on loving what you love. Bye-bye for now.